This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
we're actually likely to see government continuing to print money. And any printing of money that is not commensurate with the increase in production or productivity will be inflationary.
That's economist Prosper Chatambera on Zimbabwe's announcement that foreign currencies are no longer legal tender. Details coming up also. The suspected ringleader of Saturday's failed coup attempt in Ethiopia has been killed. And Mauritania's opposition has vowed to use every legal means to challenge Saturday's election after the hand-picked successor of the retiring president won in a landslide. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, the suspected ringleader of Saturday's failed coup attempt in Ethiopia, a regional security chief, Asab Manozege, has been killed. Six people, including a bodyguard who killed the army chief, are now known to have died in the unrest. Flags are flying at half-mast after the federal government declared a day of mourning to mark the deaths. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has urged Ethiopians to unite against evil forces set on dividing the country. Both the army chief, General Saara Mekonnen, and Amhara region governor, Ambacho Mekonnen, who was also killed, were seen as close allies of the prime minister. A heavy contingent of pro-government forces has been deployed in Amhara's capital, Bahar Dar, and the federal capital, Addis Ababa. The internet has been shut across the country. To brief us on this breaking news, we have in studio managing editor of VOA's Horn of Africa service, Tizita Balacha. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thank you, Yehis. Thank you for having me.
Tizita, a rude awakening for the peace-loving Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed. What do you think are the components that led to this sad and bloody chapter?
Well, reports have it, the perpetrator of this coup, General Assam Mino, was very much dissatisfied with the reform in Ethiopia. Firstly, he felt the Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government is not including many Amharas in its power.
It's not
power.
Inclusive, yes.
It's not inclusive. Mm-hmm. And secondly, he was having issue with other regional governments about the security of the Amhara region. He felt the Amhara region should control its own security apparatus. And remember now, Amhara region and Tigray region are claiming borders. So there is confrontation there.
Yes.
So those are his issues.
So does this general you talked about, the perpetrator of the coup, Assam Manozege, does he have a background history as far as coups are concerned?
Remember he was arrested by previous government, and he was detained for about 9 years. He was also tortured. He was accused of trying to topple the TPLF government at the time. And allegedly, he was tortured by the then security chief, Getachew Assefa, who is now a security chief for the Tigray region in Mekelle. So the contention is there. So Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's government is accused, or at least critics say, should have, you know, brought all those human rights violators to justice. You know, very few perpetrators of the human rights violation were, you know, summoned to court. There are rank and file in, you know, who committed crime. So Asamino Zege was also talking about these guys. So that's his other concern.
Talking about the prime minister, it's just amazing. It's like a 1 year ago this week that there was a bomb blast to actually assassinate the prime minister. Mm-hmm. So people are saying he is not firm enough. He's not taking firm steps to, mm-hmm. to quell these kinds of uprisings.
Well, on one hand, it's really a fresh breath for Ethiopians who have been really craving for a just governance. On the other hand, the prime minister's grip on power seems to be very loose because the regional governments are getting really stronger. They're having their own securities, their own police, their own militias. The prime minister should, going forward, should make sure the rule of law is respected in the country, whether it is, you know, the relationship between the federal government and regional governments are really fluid. It has to be really defined, and he has to take measure when a necessity, when violation happens, like this Kuna.
This sad event that just happened. Yeah. Managing Editor of VOA's Horn of Africa Service, Tizita Balacho, thank you for your input.
Thank you for having me.
Zimbabwe has outlawed the use of foreign currencies for local transactions effective immediately. The move added more uncertainty to a country already battered by a growing economic crisis. Rutendo Mawera reports from Harare.
In what is known as a statutory instrument, Finance Minister Mthuli Ncube announced today that foreign currencies are no longer legal tender, leaving the recently introduced Zimbabwean dollar as the only acceptable medium of exchange. Prosper Chitambara, an economist with the Labour and Economic Development Research Institute of Zimbabwe, told VOA that the announcement shocked the market. Chitambara says the use of the Zimbabwean dollar as the sole currency could spark a return to hyperinflation.
Because no government really did not consult with any key stakeholders in the economy. Risk now, because government now has unfettered access to the printing press. So we are likely to see, without strong institutions like a strongly independent central bank, we are actually likely to see government continuing to print money. And any printing of money that is not commensurate with the increase in production or productivity will be inflationary.
Edwin Womwe, a vegetable trader in Harare, says he's confused by the current changes.
We don't know what's going on. These guys are inconsistent. Today they say this thing, tomorrow they say another thing. They were saying it's a multi-currency kind of country, but today they're saying there's no longer multi-currency, we're just using the whatever they're saying that they're what you're using. It's even confusing to understand what's going to happen.
Owen Liwayo, a Harare resident, told VOA he thinks these are the steps towards the introduction of a new currency. Liwayo fears there's a likelihood of basic goods disappearing from shops that were selling in foreign currency.
I would like to believe these are the steps towards the introduction of Zimbabwean currency, which the president has been saying. But in view of how it's going to affect the general populace, I think the first thing that we are going to witness is the shortages of basic commodities, and also we are going to see a rise in imports where it will affect the trade balance of Zimbabwean economy.
Zimbabwe started using a basket of multiple currencies in 2009 following hyperinflation that ravaged the country's currency. In 2016, the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe introduced bond notes which traded at par with the US dollar but have been losing value and are currently trading at 1:12 on the black market. Last week, President Emmerson Mnangagwa was quoted saying Zimbabwe will have its own currency by next March. Reporting for VOA from Harare, this is Rutendo Mawere.
We- With nationwide power cuts deepening, Zimbabwe is facing the possibility of a total blackout. The official line blames the effects of climate change, but the situation appears to be due to other factors. Adigando reports on the issue.
As biting power cuts become the norm in Zimbabwe, the Zimbabwe government has been blaming water levels at main power station Kariba and aging infrastructure at the Wangi Thermal Power Station. Media reports, however, reveal that the country owes South Africa 580 million rand, a debt which led Pretoria to stop exporting electricity to Zimbabwe. Economic analyst Dumisani Sibanda speaks on the issue.
It is $83 million US split between Mozambique and Eskom. Yeah, but the figure, this has been accumulating for a long time. So we have run down our generation capabilities through inefficiencies of corruption and mismanagement. And we have been depending on imports when we should not have been.
Sibanda says the Zimbabwe Electricity Regulatory Authority, ZERA, has in the past been allocated funds to address the power stations to no avail. During the unity government, Treasury allocated US $100 million and Namibia advanced US $40 million in 2014 to the power authority to revamp the power stations without tangible results.
Where did the money go? Why is it that no one has been held to account?
Okay.
So the country is investing in energy inefficiently because whatever is invested, it is not giving the output that should be expected. I mean, if you look at Wangi, Wangi is supposed to be operating the capacity, fixed capacity is 950 megawatts, but they are doing about 450%. Yet money has been spent to rehabilitate, you know, the generation capabilities, but there are no positive results. And also they are facing problems of coal because they have mismanaged the Wangi colliery for too long.
Observers say that the government's climate change narrative in explaining electricity generation challenges does not adequately capture the real story behind the recurring energy problems. They say the cycle of drought over the years has been intensifying. Therefore, government should take that into account in its long-term planning and mobilize investment in other energy sources.
When you look at climate change is real. But even with that knowledge, we still continue to spend money on hydro expansion at Kariba when we know that the cycle of drought has moved from 4 years to 3 years. And in some instances, it's even 2 years. You know, the El Nino effect. So people are planning. They are not even looking at all the reality. So you look at that expansion for Kariba. If that money had been invested in solar, why are we investing where, you know, you have exogenous factors and you have no control over them?
Meanwhile, state media reports that President Emmerson Mnangagwa met with officials from General Electric who expressed a desire to supply electricity generation units to Wangi Power Station. Observers such as Sibanda expressed caution.
If you want to bring in those capabilities, reform the institutions there first, Wangi Colliery and ZERA. Reform them. Then when you reform them, you find you get better results. Because I can assure you, even with General Electric coming, without knowing the background, you might find where you're supposed to spend 1 million or you spend 3 million.
Observers say Zimbabwe's power problems will continue unabated as long as government does not mobilize and diversify investment in other energy sources. They cite the efforts made by the Ethiopian government with wind and solar farms as a path Zimbabwe could follow. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
Mauritania's opposition has vowed to use every legal means to challenge Saturday's election after the hand-picked successor of retiring president Mohamed Ould Abdelaziz won in a landslide. Official results gave Mohamed Ould Ghazouni 52% of the vote, eliminating the need for a runoff. The retired general served as Abdelaziz's chief of staff from 2008 to last year. It's the first time since independence from France in 1960 that an elected president has completed his term and transferred power to an elected successor. Bram Dag Abid, a human rights activist who has campaigned against slavery, which continues despite a ban that was passed in 1981, finished second in the election with 19% of the votes. Abid and three other opposition candidates said they would challenge the results in court and organize protests. Deputy UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet expressed outrage today at the brutal crackdown by Sudanese security forces this month against peaceful protesters. She says she regrets that the Transitional Military Council has not responded to the UN request for access to investigate allegations of serious human rights violations, including rape and sexual abuse of men and women by the Joint Security Forces during the crackdown. There is also allegations that hundreds of protesters may be missing. The protest movement said yesterday it has accepted an Ethiopian roadmap for a civilian-led transitional government, but the military didn't immediately commit to the plan. The Associated Press said it obtained a copy of the proposal, which said the military would chair the ruling council in the first 18 months and the protest leaders for the second half of the transition. The largest anti-government protest in Liberia's recent history took place in Monrovia on June 7th. It was the product of growing opposition to soccer player turned president George Weah, as Liberia's declining economy is making life difficult for the country's citizens. As Lucinda Rawas reports from Monrovia, the coming months will be critical to the success of Weah's first term in office.
This was the sound of some of the adoring crowds cheering for Africa's greatest ever footballer, George Weah, shortly before he became president of Liberia in January 2018. A year and a half later, the crowds are sounding less positive. About 10,000 people attended an anti-government protest in Monrovia earlier this month. Most were angry about Liberia's struggling economy. Many feel that President Weah is not doing enough to tackle rising inflation. Some accuse senior officials of stealing the country's money, including $25 million intended to be infused into the economy to mop up an excess of local currency. 33-year-old Priscilla Deme runs a dry goods store. She voted for Weah in 2017, but she is beginning to regret her decision.
I said it could for my children to survive for me. I finally love the way for my children. Everything process is very up. We don't know what going on in the country. I vote my president. My president do nothing for me. The second election, I cannot vote for my president again.
But not everyone has turned their back on Weah. 35-year-old money changer Munya Sharif doesn't blame him for the country's economic difficulties.
All these problems that happened in this country were caused by the past government. We need to get the government to change to do their work. But other people, they know that George Weah was not able to run this country. But I believe that if they get George Weah the chance, George Weah is going to do better.
The protest organizers are a group of opposition and civil society activists who call themselves the Council of Patriots. Radio talk show host Henry Costa is one of the leading figures.
We want the president to publish his assets. We think it's very important. We want to know what he had before becoming president, how he is able to build all of these properties and acquire new ones in a relatively short period of time when he didn't do that before coming to power.
The protest group has issued a long list of other demands, including extensive reform programs and the firing of several officials, including the finance minister. The group is threatening more protests if the government fails to act on their petition within a month. President Weah has called for a national roundtable to hear people's views on how best to revive the economy. Eugene Nagbe, the Minister for Information, says the dialogue will be the extent of the government's response.
As Liberians, they have a right to make their views clear. But as a government, our response is a nationalistic one, a general one, and this is why Mr. President recognized that there are alternative views. And because of the alternative views, he said, come to the table so that we can have a discussion.
Talks have started with the International Monetary Fund about a program to address poverty and inflation. But until the effects of this trickle down to the masses, the protests against President Weah are likely to continue. Lucinda Rouse for VOA News, Monrovia.
The Gambian government has signed a funding agreement with the Saudi-based Fund for Development for $92.5 million. The money is aimed at helping revamp the country's infrastructure, road network, energy and other needs. Reporter Pandera Mbai has the details.
The multi-million dollar Saudi fund project is part of the Gambia's preparations to host the OIC summit scheduled for 2022 in Banjul. Part of the funds will be used to improve Gambia's decaying infrastructure, energy and water supplies. Construction of a modern VIP lounge at the Banjul International Airport is also part of the agenda. The country was supposed to host this November's OIC summit, but it has been moved to Saudi Arabia due to insufficient infrastructure and logistics. Mambure Njai is Gambia's finance minister. He began his announcement yesterday by commenting on the historical relationship between the Gambia and Saudi Arabia.
Your Excellency, 32 years ago, the Gambia made a sovereign decision to be a member of the Saudi Fund as partners in development. 32 years ago, that decision has yielded dividends to the country. The Saudi Fund's contribution to the Republic of the Gambia in terms of socio-economic development has impacted citizens at the lowest level of our society.
Finance Minister Njai notes that each time the Gambia has been confronted with economic difficulties, the Saudi Fund is one of the institutions that have been at the forefront in coming to the country's rescue.
They have contributed, included in this project, almost $200 million. They have contributed to the roads, education, energy, and economic development sectors in this country. 32 years ago, that decision, we will not regret, and we are not regretting it. And today is another milestone in our development.
Dr. Khalid Akudari is the vice chairman and managing director of the Saudi Fund for Development.
We in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia greatly appreciate the efforts of the government of the Gambia and your leadership to build a strong and integrated economy towards fulfillment of the aspiration of the friendly people of the Gambia.
Khalid says the funding extended to the Gambia was in two soft loans and two grants. He says Saudi Arabia is keen to continue its cooperation with the Gambia. For VOA Africa, this is Pandirim by reporting.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, how long can a head of state maintain effective leadership? Some African leaders are forced out of office, while others respect the political process. The politics of transition on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa.
VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.